This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
It's near Mindanao, calculated by the U.S. State Department to be worth over $1 trillion. Melting Arctic ice and expanding sea lanes have put international focus on the low-key Arctic Council, comprised of eight nations, including the United States, Canada, Denmark, and Russia, who have territory in the Arctic Ocean. More countries are now seeking to join the Council as shipping traffic increases, a consequence of climate change. According to The Economist, Asian trading giant Singapore has applied for permanent observer status on the Arctic Council in order to defend its trading interests and to take steps to halt the melting of the ice cap, which could put the city-state underwater. China, India, South Korea, the European Union, Greenpeace, and the International Association of Oil and Gas Producers are also trying to win seats on the Council. Energy companies are especially interested in having a voice on the Arctic Council because the body sets rules for trade and development of the Arctic Ocean region. The United States Geological Survey estimates the Arctic has 13% of the world's untapped oil reserves and 30% of all potential gas reserves on the planet. The Canadian government has expressed concern about the growing pressure to exploit resources in the Arctic, which scientists say could cause permanent damage to the region's pristine ecosystem. 2 years ago, agents from the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, or ATF, inspected the records at Taylor's Trading Post, a gun shop in rural Pennsylvania. It was the first inspection at the gun shop in 30 years. There, agents uncovered thousands of violations of federal gun laws. The shop owner could not account for over 3,000 guns that were bought and sold over the previous 3 years. The ATF sought to revoke Scott Taylor's license to sell guns in November 2011, but Taylor, running the shop from his house, continued to sell guns for 14 months as he pressed an appeal in federal court. The slow enforcement action against Taylor's Trading Post illustrates how difficult it can be to enforce current gun laws under the constraints of the ATF's limited budget and number of agents. According to the Center for Public Integrity, 8 years can go by before a gun dealer undergoes an inspection. In the wake of the Newtown, Connecticut Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre, the ATF is coming under increasing scrutiny. Becca Knox of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence complains current rules handcuff federal agents by barring them from conducting more than one spot inspection a year of gun dealers. On the other hand, opponents of the reform of gun laws, like the NRA, say the ATF inspections are arbitrary and unfair. However, current federal law requires all gun dealers to record all transactions so any gun used in a crime can be traced. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Elaine Osowski.
On February 17th, tens of thousands of Americans and a contingent of Canadians rallied on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. to demand that President Obama veto the government permit needed by TransCanada to build the Keystone XL pipeline across the international border that would carry tar sands oil from Alberta to refineries on the Texas Gulf Coast. The rally, claimed as the largest climate change protest in U.S. history, was organized by the Sierra Club and 350.org. The extraction of tar sands oil in northern Canada, much of it on indigenous lands occupied by what are called First Nations, has already destroyed large areas of the land, poisoning both water and air. That's likely the cause of new and more frequent occurrences of cancer and respiratory ailments among both humans and animals that live there. The spirited 2.5-hour rally in Washington featured a dozen speakers, including Van Jones, who worked briefly in the Obama White House as special advisor on green jobs. He now works with a group, Rebuild the Dream. Here is his short but powerful speech.
President Obama, all the good that you have done, all the good you can imagine doing, will be wiped out by floods, by fires, by superstorms, if you fail to act now to deal with this crisis that is a gun pointed at the head of the future. Everything you have done, history will judge you 20 years from now based on one decision alone. That decision is not in the hands of the Congress. That decision is not in the hands of any governors. That decision is not in the hands of any mayors or any dog catchers. The decision is in your hands, Mr. President. It's in your hands. Your hands. The decision to let this pipeline come through America is the most fateful decision you will ever make, Mr. President. It would be like jabbing a dirty needle into this country from Canada. It would be like lighting a fuse on a carbon bomb. That's what it would be like doing, Mr. President. And you cannot allow that to happen. If the pipeline goes through, Mr. President, the first thing it runs over will not be farmland. The first thing it runs over will not be small towns. If you let this pipeline go through, Mr. President, the first thing it runs over is the credibility of the President of the United States of America. That's the first thing it runs over. That's the first thing it runs over. I want to say unequivocally to this next generation, stop being chumps. I'm going to say it again to the next generation. Stop being chumps. You elected this president. You re-elected this president. You gave him the chance to make history. He needs to give you the chance to have a future. Stop being chumps. Stop being chumps and fight for your future. Thank you very much.
We next hear an excerpt from a talk given at a forum held on the evening after the rally titled Women of the Land Speak, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Tar Sands to Renewables, featuring two Native women from Canada and two white ranchers from the U.S. Eleanor Fairchild is a Texas rancher, some of whose property was taken by TransCanada through eminent domain to build the southern leg of the Keystone XL pipeline, which is already under construction.
I found out at the State Department what tar sands was and the damage it was doing in Canada and how much water it took to get it out, how expensive it was. And that was when I decided, well, I was mad because they lied to me. And I decided that I needed to fight this. But I've never done this before. This is my first experience with this. But at this point, TransCanada is on my land, and the pipe's in the ground. One thing that I can't understand in this whole thing is how TransCanada has so much power in the United States. It's a foreign company. I think that it's immoral for us as a nation to allow a pipeline to come through here with tar sands that's not even going to be for us in the first place, but I don't like tar sands anywhere. But they ought to leave it in the ground. But I think it's immoral for us to enable Canada to do what it's doing. As a people, I think it's wrong. I think about our children, and people talk about our debt. You know, we can get out of a debt. But if we mess up our water and our earth doing something stupid, like using this stuff, tar sands, you know, we might make it an earth where our children can't live. It might be a thing that we can't even solve regardless of how much money we have. I think if we're not careful, we're going to destroy ourselves and everything on this earth. It's time to start thinking about what we do today.
That was Texas rancher Eleanor Fairchild speaking at a forum sponsored by the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus with the Indigenous Environmental Network and 350.org. This report on the February 17th Keystone XL pipeline protest in Washington, D.C. was recorded and produced by Between the Lines Melinda Tuhus.
Music and Mayhem via downtempo, hip-hop, rap, drum and bass, breakbeats, and everything else except the kitchen. The Soundbox focuses on local hip-hop noise, abstract originators, classic hits, respecting the quiet storm, and toasting the original. Your hosts are Dina B and PDX Biologic. Tune in to Soundbox every Saturday from 10 p.m. to midnight here on KBOO Portland. Tune in to Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. In his State of the Union address this month, President Obama pleased many environmental activists when he pledged to seriously address the issue of climate change. But hidden within his promises of promoting renewable and sustainable energy development was a pronouncement that the United States has drastically increased domestic drilling for natural gas. What Obama did not mention was that a lot of that natural gas is now extracted using an unconventional, controversial method known as fracking. This morning, we talk about why fracking is not a sustainable solution to our energy needs. My guest is Sandra Steingraber, one of the contributors to the new coffee table tome that we've been featuring on Locus Focus this month, Energy Overdevelopment and the Delusion of Endless Growth. Ecologist, author, and cancer survivor, Sandra is an internationally recognized authority on the environmental links to cancer and human health. A columnist for Orion magazine, she's currently a scholar in residence in Ithaca College in Ithaca, New York, and she's the author of The Whole Fracking Enchilada in Energy. Welcome to Locus Focus, Sandra.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you start out your article by saying that I have come to believe that extracting natural gas from shale using the newish technique called hydrofracking is the environmental issue of our time, and I think you should think so too. So, we just heard a piece a little while ago before on the problems with tar sands extraction and the Keystone XL pipeline, and there's all these environmental problems facing us. So why have you focused in on fracking as like the issue we need to focus on?
Fracking is, of course, one of several forms of extreme energy extraction that we are now actively going after, since all the easy-to-get fossil fuels have pretty much already been gotten and burned through. Fracking, of all of them, tar sands, mountaintop removal, deep sea oil drilling, is the one that unrolls across the landscape where we all live, including very densely populated areas. And so it's the one that uses our land as its factory floor. And there's no zoning. It turns our communities into industrial zones, and we're compelled to live in. So from a public health point of view, especially now that fracking has moved from west to east and is massing at our southern border here in New York, where I live, We're talking about, you know, the third most populous state in the Union with a very densely settled rural area, and now we're going to frack it. So drilling and fracking, onshore drilling and fracking operations will certainly have released a lot of new fossil fuels, and we now have this sort of temporary glut of gas, but these wells deplete very rapidly, and so the only way to keep it going, keep the fossil fuel party going, is to basically transform our whole rural area into a great big gas field. So now we're at a position, and this is new data released by Randy Udall, that leasing land for drilling and fracking exploration is now the number one land use in North America. So we now have more land under lease to gas and oil exploration, thanks to fracking, than we have in corn and wheat acreage, for example. And that's pretty stunning, especially since we're on the brink of exporting quite a lot of it, thus becoming a gas extraction colony for the global marketplace.
Well, you refer to natural gas as kind of a Jekyll and Hyde fuel. What do you mean by that? Because natural gas has been promoted as like a clean alternative to coal. So what do you see as the up and the downsides of natural gas?
Well, I no longer see an upside to natural gas, but the old narrative, it's still out there, has a lot of currency, right, is that it's a bridge fuel to the future because it burns, at the point of that you light a match to it, natural gas as a fossil, and we have to remember it is a fossil, even though it's a vapor, it's not solid like a lump of coal. But when you light it on fire, you get half of the CO2 that an equivalent amount of coal will produce. However, that kind of very simplistic analysis leaves out the footprint that natural gas has in its extraction process. And when